Today on Vox Talks, who's bailing out the kids and how big is the bailout? Welcome to Vox Talks from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. We know quite a lot about how savings and government support bail out entire households, and we're learning more about that every day at the moment, but we know much less about how family and friends support each other in a crisis. The little we do know suggests it's much more common in developing economies than in advanced economies. But all of you who've taken advantage of the bank of mum and dad, or I suppose those of you who've been those mums and dads, know that this type of financial support can be very important. And it's the focus of a new paper called Bailing Out the Kids that uses new sources of data to find out exactly how important. One of the authors is Niels Johannesson of the University of Copenhagen. He's a CEPR fellow and he joins me today. Welcome to Vox Talks.
Thanks very much.
You're looking at how people in social networks support each other financially. I did say there's not much research on this. Why is it so difficult for economists to measure this?
Yeah, so of course the key challenge when you start thinking about even like studying employment insurance empirically is like how can I measure these transfers between people? And this is just not trivial. If you start thinking about the data sources that economists have been increasingly using like for the past decades, so none of them give you exactly what you want. So if you think of, for example, so government administrative data, where you have great information about earnings, about government transfers, even sometimes about assets and debt, but there's typically just no information about transfers from one person to the other. Then, like many countries have great surveys. Few of those include questions about transfers between parents and their children, but surveys, they often involve quite a small number of people, and only a small fraction of those have actually experienced adverse events, you know, that trigger financial support from friends and family. So this is also not ideal. So you need to think about something else.
When it comes to helping in these social networks, are you just looking at financial help here?
I mean, so I totally agree that there are other very important dimensions of help than actual money transfer. So like you can think of family and friends who help babysit your children. This is also like this time spent is also an economic input because otherwise you'd need to hire a nanny. But I mean, so this kind of things we do not study because we don't observe them in our data. But I think that financial support, financial insurance in this narrow economic sense is important when you suffer adverse shocks in your life. It's just hugely important for your welfare that someone picks you up. So this is why we should care about that.
You have to know who's given money to who, and you also have to know who each of those people's family and friends are. So where on earth do you get this kind of data?
This is really the main innovation of the paper, to put together a data set that can shine light on these things. So the starting point is a collaboration with a large retail bank in Denmark that has around 1 million customers. And imagine that, I mean, for these 1 million customers, we basically observe all transactions in and out of their accounts. So that is their card spending, but it's also their wire transfers and their transfers made via these mobile applications that have become like very popular these days. This is the money transfers that we start with. And of course, this data is not so useful for our purposes because you don't observe exactly like who the counterparts are. You don't see whether a specific counterpart is a friend or a sibling or something like that. So we need to combine this data source with administrative information from the Danish government because those data sources are informative about these social networks. So for example, like in Denmark, there is a population register that define parent-child links. So for each individual, like also the individual's siblings, grandparents, so on. We also have an education register that tells us for each person like where the person went to school. And that basically allows us to identify a network of school friends, so people that you studied with at each of these levels. And there's also an employment register that tells us what workplaces you worked at for different periods of time. And that allows us to define a network of work friends. And so when we combine data on money transfers from the bank and these indicators of social networks from the government registers, we can basically pick out the money transfers that flow from a person to his or her parents, to his or her siblings, to his or her school friends, work friends, etc. So that's the main idea.
Can you identify cash payments or other bank accounts? Is that going to be a problem with the quality of your data?
Yes, so clearly, if you give me an envelope, we don't see that in our data. And so luckily, in most advanced economies, and in Denmark in particular, so cash is used much less than it used to be. Just the fact that we are living in a very like digital economy is helpful. Nevertheless, like these cash transfers, of course, still happen, and we try to reduce the importance of it by studying only people who live in different parts of the country than their parents. So meaning that if you don't interact with your parents physically on a daily basis, well, then you'll be more likely to rely on electronic transfers when you do transfers. Also, we are able to focus on people who are exclusive customers at this bank we are collaborating with. So you could be worried, you know, that you have other banks, not other banks, you know, like with the transfers going in and out. But we can basically study here a sample that only use this particular bank and therefore have no such other accounts.
The whole point is that it replaces income that's been lost. So what kind of financial shocks are you looking for here? How can you identify them in the data as well?
To find the shocks, we make use of both the bank data and also the administrative government information. Our main analysis studies so variation in annual income. So say that, for example, that you drop from around the median income level to, say, the 25th percentile of the income distribution. And then we study like how do transfers from your parents respond to that shock. But we also look at other shocks. So we look at the so high frequency setting with like in event studies. We look at the, so what happens around job losses. So people who've had the same employer for a long time and suddenly they lose their job. We look at, so using the card spending data, we look at expenditure shocks and we can pick out people who suddenly need to pay a big bill from their dentist or from the car repair shop. We studied divorces. So again, the population register tells us like, which people live together. So we can see partners who in a given month, they move apart and we see like how transport network respond to that. And finally, we study what we call financial distress, which is really kind of the first time that you receive an arrears notice from the bank. Mm. To what extent your parents and friends help you out in these situations.
Yeah, that's very clever. So the big question is, how much of that financial shortfall is made up?
We like to express our findings with a notion called replacement rates. So for each dollar that I lose, for a dollar shock to my budget, either in the form of lost income or increased expenditure, how much do I then get back? Our headline number is for people who are in the bottom of the income distribution, who have like a low income level. Here we find a total replacement rate of around 7%, meaning that for each dollar that they lose, they get 7% back. And so most of that will come in the form of money transfers from their parents. There'll also be some money transfers from their siblings, but there's very little on average insurance provided by grandparents and friends, basically. And then there's one chunk of insurance that we have not talked about. A common response to very adverse shock is to move back to one's parents. And we've tried to estimate the value of this type of in-kind transfer by first studying, you know, like when people move back to their parents, how much do they save? We look at their card spending on food. We look at their payments for rent. We look at their payments for utilities and say, how much do your spending drop when you move back to your parents? That gives us some notion of like, what is the value of this living with your parents. For these shocks at the bottom of the income distribution, this margin of response is quite important and also contributes to this total replacement rate of 7%.
So it is interesting that there is a quite large difference between the replacement rate for low-income households and high-income households, isn't it?
Yes. So we find like striking differences in replacement, both across income levels. So basically your own income level. So there's much higher insurance from the social network when you are poor than when you are relatively high income. And then the insurance level or the replacement rate also depends a lot on your parents' income, just because parents really tend to be the key providers of insurance here. So basically we find the highest replacement rates when we look at individuals who have themselves low levels of income and whose parents have high levels of income. And that fits very well with standard theory of altruism, where transfers from parents to their children depend on how much do parents value money and how much do their children value money.
Denmark is not a typical country. Do you think that your results also would apply to family and friends relationships in the US or in Germany or the UK or any other developed country?
So that is a very good question, and one that I cannot answer, of course, completely. But so Denmark differs from these countries in at least two respects. So first of all, that the social insurance is more generous, meaning that the state helps you more when you're in trouble. So, and you might expect that this state insurance crowds out private insurance. And then the other notable difference is that higher education is free. I guess we have the notion that at least in the US and probably also in the UK, a lot of transfers from parents to children come in the form of financing tuition. So in these two dimensions, Denmark is different. I still think that we try to design our analysis in a way so that it still speaks to countries with different social insurance profiles and also different school finance systems. And first of all, we study events, for example, divorce, for example, financial distress, that are not covered by social insurance. Social insurance does not crowd out any private insurance because like there is no social insurance of such adverse events. Secondly, so we always measure these adverse shocks to individuals after government intervention. So we basically say like how much of a dollar lost after accounting for the government transfer is replaced by the network. You already accounted for the size of the insurance when you measure the shock. And then finally, as for schooling, so we simply, like in most of our analysis, we simply leave out students because they are unusual in the sense that, I mean, they might have low income, but it typically does not reflect any adverse outcome. So I think that probably most of our results will, to some extent, carry over to other economies.
Niels, that's very interesting. Thank you. And I think probably a lot of people listening to this are thinking, I might just read that paper. I might use it the next time that I'm negotiating a bailout, whichever side that they're on. So thank you for your help with that as well.
Well, thank you.
The paper that you will want to download is Discussion Paper 14867 from the CEPR, and the full title is Bailing Out the Kids, New Evidence on Informal Insurance from 1 Billion Bank Transfers. The authors are Asger Andersen, Niels Johannesson, and Adam Sheridan. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. We bring you the most innovative economic research every week. So subscribe to Vox Talks and you'll never miss an episode. And remember, you can find 10 years of Vox Talks at voxeu.org/vox-talks.